It is Friday, July 31st at 6:43 p.m. It's reading number 105, copyright 2009, New Grand View Incorporated, all rights reserved. This is Carolyn with JW and Ion.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. And I think our topic for this morning, as we talked a tiny bit about with JW, maybe the new alchemy. Is that your...
Very good.
Okay,
very good. That is fine. First of all, we got to do a little bit of groundwork, just so everybody catches up with what alchemy is.
Yes.
So, let's start with your definition so we don't start them on a wrong, false premise with what a laudable, the understandable definition of alchemy is.
Would you like Webster's or Wiki?
Please yourself.
I like Wiki for this type of thing because it gives you a little more breadth.
Girth.
Yeah, girth. Okay, it is. Alchemy is both a philosophy and a pseudo-scientific practice with an aim of achieving ultimate wisdom as well as immortality, and then involving the improvement of the alchemist as well as the making of several substances described as possessing unusual properties. The practical aspect of alchemy generated the basics of modern inorganic chemistry, namely concerning procedures, equipment, and the identification and use of many current substances. Is that
very
enough?
That's wonderful, because it's not what everybody thought it was.
Right, I mean, it began our inorganic chemistry, for Pete's sakes.
So, let's go with what everybody thinks it is, and then we'll straighten it all out.
Okay.
An alchemist is one who basically could take a substance like lead, which is super, super, super close in its molecular structure to gold. And alchemists were ones who had the ability to ineffectually change that structure to turn lead into gold.
Right.
But that's nowhere in your definition, amazingly, is it?
Mm-mm.
So, isn't that interesting? So you plug in, so we'll straighten it out right from the start. The process comes from the delving into capacities that are, we want to be genteel with how we proceed. It brings you back into a fun, new place of figuring out things you didn't know what were, make them into things that you find out what they are, and use those basal litmus as a litmus test of the perfunction or unction, maybe that's a better word, of this new understanding of a philosophy, new understanding of what something is used for, what something applies toward.
I think you're going to have to kind of smooth that out. It doesn't make that much sense what you said, because it went on for a long time.
Correct. And
an alchemist is one who turns lead into gold, and also
one who is available or vulnerable to the creation of new sciences. Is that simpler for you?
Yeah, that's nice.
It's a way to make the ununderstood understandable. But yet, it's surrounded in Bob's mystery body. Because most of them are... they call it a pseudoscience. Well, isn't that interesting? Does that mean it's not valid or has no validity?
I don't know. If they thought that, they would just call it sham signs or fake signs.
Well, quackery. Mm-hmm. But many times that's what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of an intriguingness.
And they didn't say pseudoscience. They said pseudoscientific practice.
Okay, what's the difference?
Yeah, well, it's not even near a science. It's actually in that definition. Maybe we should go to Webster's.
Okay, maybe that'll soften it a bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A medieval chemical science and speculative philosophy aiming to achieve the transmutation of the base metals into gold, comma, the discovery of the universal cure for disease, comma, and the discovery of a means of indefinitely prolonging life.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. So let's call out, let's just take it. Bob may even play with this a little and sort of do some other tweaking or twittering regarding it. But let's just begin from the fountain of youth of achieving the alchemist's proximity of eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start from there and then traipse it back down through the whole process, if that's okay.
Okay, great.
Okay, so in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Oh, brother. This is going to be a tall tale.
We just couldn't resist because we had to format it in some way mm-hmm. that would be palatable. Well, we've established who God is, okay? And now we have a definition from the lexicographer Noah Webster. And this works because it seems to be achieved or accepted more widely as your human definition. But actually, it's a little bit more than that. It's bringing you into a place, you, the human creator, oh wait, that's God, oh yeah, they're the same. Then you're in a position to where you come into the place of knowing of your control and the science regarding these rules and regulations regarding life, eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've opened up a whole new paradigm, you see, that can be embraced, or it just as easily can be ruled out. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
That you would rule out a capacity. Okay. Now, as you're living your life, then you might decide that it would be in your fastest path to your joy to seek out an alchemist that could give you secrets or answers regarding this, what was the earlier one, pseudo-scientific practice?
Yes.
That would be embraceable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, if it's embraceable, would that not be applicable, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, wait a second, then that's sort of off the grid, but we can get you back there, but we're delving from a place of comfort, because if you get too far out too quickly, then you've lost your head of steam, I guess is the way to say it, but if you go at it from the aspect of, okay, I want to live forever, how do I do it? Okay, mm-hmm. And an alchemist is one who can explain that. Okay, then let's find one.
Mm-hmm.
How would you know an alchemist if you saw one?
And maybe the first question, though, is what would give a person the idea that they wanted to live forever? And we know that's a possibility, so...
Well, not only is it a possibility...
A reality.
It is. So now you
So either how did we get away from knowing that we had to go and find someone to get us back to that?
Good,
that's
good.
Probably a place to start.
You remember to forget. Mm-hmm. Or you forgot to remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's still that the placeholder in the sand,
mm-hmm.
that it is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? So, perfect words. How do you come into a place where you know something is in your experience, and yet it is made unavailable for a practical, embraceable knowing? Well, you push yourself into a position of you're changing and adjusting quantitatively your belief system.
Okay.
Now, let's just go into it just head on. What's wrong with turning lead into gold? Is that a possibility?
I imagine it is if we...
Well, of course it is, because we've thoroughly established that you can do, be, or have anything that you'd like to be, do, or have. So much so that the lexicographer got a hold of it and gave it a definition. Well, it's in someone's quiver somewhere, or they would have called it, like you said, quackery or foolishness or an unarchetypal grid.
And look what they threw together. Transmutation of base metals into gold, the discovery of a universal cure for disease, and the discovery of a means of indefinitely prolonging life.
They all kind of go hand in hand and hand in hand within the creator's perception of ability.
Right.
Because if you had those abilities and you looked it up in the dictionary, then they would call you an alchemist, would they not?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, we thought that was the Illuminati. Oh, wait, no, that's a different conversation. But enlightenment seems to stem from that same tactile knowing.
Right.
But it gets tangled up. But how do you untangle it? Well, better question is, how did it get tangled? And that was your question earlier that we'd like to play with a bit.
Yes.
Tangling up, you put yourself in a position to where your belief system is ineffectually skewed into a acceptable place of what you call fact. And that's because you only allow in your experience someone else's validated creation. And you eliminate all other possibilities except those that someone else has created.
Why? Because you think they're the scientist and you aren't?
No, but where would you come up with the idea that you would want a light bulb into your experience? And if you decided that you did, and there wasn't one already in creation, then you would have to do without until a creator created it. Well, you could create it yourself, but yet that's too hard. There's limitations. You can't do that. You eliminate that from your ability and capacity. It's called creating by default.
Yes, and that's what I said. You wait on someone else's science or creation.
And that can be your experience if you choose to. But many things are created, necessity being the mother of invention, comes to a place where you go, wait a second, it doesn't have to be like that. You can have light different ways. You can have that, but that's sometimes done through contrast. Ooh, that nasty, evil, terrible contrast that takes your very life force away from you. No. It just redefines what it is that's in your experience that you'd like to be in a different way, a more fullness or completeness. Okay. Now, if you, the alchemist's job, let's do a job description by your definition, is to play in what you call scientific worlds or fields that have to do with one, having masterful control of elements at a molecular level, to be the wielder of compounds. really have an effect on wellness, well-being, or undisease. Mm-hmm. Undisease. Wait a minute. Yeah, undisease. Well, you could just say lack of ease, but then you got to, are you creating lack of ease, or is it the undoing of disease?
Mm-hmm.
See, it's kind of cheeky there when you sort of play with it that way, but let's just leave it at
that. Well, it's more the disallowance of the aspect of disease.
Yes, indeed. But see, you got to establish that that's what that really is. Otherwise, see, the alchemist that understood that would be head and shoulders above the average bear,
mm-hmm.
the average creator who goes, oh, no, you don't understand. I have the leukemia, and it's taking my life force away from me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then if that be the case and you embrace that definition, you most certainly would be looking for a new case of alchemy to be injected into your experience that can open you into a new place of allowing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you find a allowing patient, I guess that they require patience, an allowing patient that can embrace the art of alchemy, then you're well on the way of changing your individual human belief system that can relax and allow you into ease.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes the one prescription that would dispel all illness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the magic pill that you were discussing?
Absolutely.
Isn't that the magic way of coming into a place of attacking the lack of ease?
Mm-hmm.
So let's rename it a bit and take it from an alchemist standpoint. It might open up some new ways of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, you may step into a nice, big, fun bear trap that's very delightfully embraceable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you, the major component says with everything is RNA. RNA, which is relax and allow.
Mm-hmm.
Just understood that that is the beginning place, because otherwise you're going to push against it and make contrast where it won't be your experience regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're trying to soothe a place, you have to be careful, because you got to acknowledge that it's rough in order to soothe it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And now if you're going to heal someone, well, isn't that what happens? That's what you do with dogs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So heal is out. Okay? We did fix. Well, they'd have to be acknowledged that they're broken. Well, okay, let's get the right words here. Okay? If you have a lack of ease or dis-ease, how would you come into a place of having abundant ease?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be fun to go to the doctor and then, instead of prescribing and let you know what your dis-ease is, that they spend that office visit, that time in the office, they get paid hourly to tell you how you're disconnected, if that was turned around, and they explain how you are actually overabundant with ease?
Mm-hmm.
When I think about that for just a second.
Yeah.
If the balance was you have an abundance of energy, you have an abundance of even tactile expressions of your body, going from hot to cold to hot to muscular, to with holding a little baby fat, to having all your faculties, keeping your hair, your teeth, your appendages, all of them intact and dis-ease free.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's kind of a strange, Bob would scream and say that's too many double negatives. Why can't you simplify the thing out so everybody can understand it? Well, that's exactly what this should do, pronounced effectively, because it changes the way For indeed the ordained perfect words of God. That was a committee, okay? It parallels your AMA, but we don't want to be cheeky, but it does. The standard of care. Standard of care. Well, what's that based on? We don't understand it, so we're hoping...
Oh, I don't. I forget that. I don't understand it either.
Well, but what's it based on? The minimum layer, as opposed to the maximum daily dose, this is the minimum daily dose? Would that be
right, that be appropriate? Well, it's what everybody has to do, lockstep together in the treatment of patients. With no...
But isn't it interesting that if you don't chart it, then it didn't take place?
Yeah, that's one of the rules.
Well, now, wait a second. If you're charting, isn't that what the astrologers do?
Well, with the stars, but yeah, charting is it's the same word, but a whole different formula.
Is it?
Well, CHART.
No. Now wait. Now this is good. What is a chart? You read someone's chart.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And that's based on what you've done or what's been done to a patient to give you crib notes as to their place in the stream of living.
Mm-hmm.
What's the CB? What's the blood count? What's the infection? Where's the white blood cells? Are they lucid? Are they normal? Are they have any appendages missing? You know, the history.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's written down on a piece of paper in a chart. And everything that's done that's recordable has to be recorded. And if it's not recorded, then it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Straight out, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, an astrologist, or one who you go to read the stars,
mm-hmm.
They take you into an exposable experience in which they read your chart.
Mm-hmm.
They chart your beginning place based on your date of coming forth.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not done from the basis of time, then it's okay. But if it is from time, then of course, obviously, we have the issue. It's not physical regarding that because there's not any. But let's take it from the beginning, okay? Then they place you in where you fit into this cycle called living.
Mm-hmm.
As in comparison to where the stars in the heavens are, in certain revolutions and rotations of the constellations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, please straighten us out if we're missing the mark here, correct?
Yes, that's what they seem to do.
Okay. Well, now, how is that different than a surgeon looking at a chart to tell what they're going to do based on what they have been, what's been charted in your regard? Wouldn't be different. Are charts always correct? We don't think so.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole premise is different. Blood is different from, Mercury being above you when you were born.
Yes, but isn't that about as subjective as when they take your temperature and you have a very delightful bowel movement that they chart that in your file and your record? And isn't that what they use to gauge how you're doing?
And the point being?
It's no different than an astrologer reading your chart.
And is either valid?
Well, we would say one is as valid as another. Now, boy, that's a whole twist on things, isn't it? You didn't expect alchemy to get you there.
Yeah.
You start looking at the whole dynamic of what really is taking place in the occurrence. One is just as valid as any. Because if it's not in the stars, if it's not in your astrology chart, then it's not in your experience. Well, if a nurse comes and gives you Narcan and doesn't write it in your chart, then it didn't happen. Isn't it interesting? You see, if they didn't chart that they gave you an MS Cotton, then it didn't. They didn't give it to you. You'd have to count the pixels down to calculate how many of yours there and how many's not there. But still, if it's not in your chart, you didn't get it. Same thing with your astrology world. Okay, now let's bring it back to alchemy here so we can be apropos with the subject at hand. But it gives a whole new way of thinking about this whole charting business, of this chartable knowledge of understanding. Well, in alchemy, if you had the magic pill that cured, cured, isn't that what you do to meat? we better find a better word. That you administer to a human meat sack that brings them into blissful, perfect alignment. Oh my God, you're back into the stargazing again. Perfect alignment in the age of Aquarius. Isn't that interesting how you draw bets and then and folks blow that off as foolishness, but they have no problem if the chart's done from the Mayo Clinic that this indeed is the new transubstantiated reality. Yes?
It still doesn't resonate with me, the comparison.
Okay, ask some questions.
Well, how is a astrology chart anywhere near a hospital chart?
It's just as close. If they just look at what is and write it down, and then that's what they use to gauge your standard of care from that point forward. Yes.
Maybe.
Well, now, wait. No, okay. If not maybe, then how be?
Well, it's...
It's a recorded analysis of your state of being.
Yes, but wouldn't it be just easier to say, well, a hospital chart doesn't really record anything about you except some bits and pieces of parameters that have been decided upon as a standard of care, and therefore probably isn't very accurate and as inaccurate as an astrology chart, instead of coming from it the other way around, that doesn't make much more sense.
Well, but I know, but if you do it that way, then you're spending this time together showing how you're uncreating alchemy. You can do, be, or have anything that you'd like to do, be, or have. Otherwise, you'd have to debunk astrology and debunk what you call Western medicine.
I see.
Because we can do that all day, every day, but then those creators will just grab hold of it and perfect it. And what we're trying to do is to bring an understanding of alchemy and draw a parallel of its pluses and minuses so that the human creator can attach with their non-physical and the fulcrum of their mind, allow that balance. And that's specifically why we went at it that way. So you could embrace it or push against it, because many of those, those cancer survivors believe in their chart.
Right.
See, if they can embrace Western medicine and can be, we don't like that word healed, because there's never a healing, unless you're correcting a dog. But that's okay. I mean, people will understand the word, but will you see our position on that quite succinctly? It becomes all this mysterious tomfoolery that you're trying to introduce is not only tomfoolery if it's pushed again. people used to be healed with a teaspoon of quinine water. Yes, well, it still works good for malaria even today.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, so now you see, you come into a whole new dynamic of allowing.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's interesting. So if your stars are right and your chart lines up, and your doctor's in a good day, and his chart lines up with astrology, and the nurse practitioner who's coming to gauge your biological functions is in alignment, and recording accurately this snapshot scenario of your beingness, boy, you've got it, Johnny, on the spot. You've got it together. All is well and right with the world. But see, for all that to line up, if you're not in an alignable, if you're not in an alignable place, something's going to fall short of their mark.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's the contrast. That's why they call it the practice of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
How many times do you have to do it until you're no longer practicing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Take one, take two, take three, take four. Take five. When you need to study your lines, because we wouldn't have to have 240 takes of the stagecoach rolling down the hill, see? Because if you practice it down to the point where it becomes a knowing rather than a practice, then you've taken away the dynamic that would be so contrasting for the individual human creator. Or we could do it the way you're saying it, which is so much easier, but not as tactile, is get yourself aligned with yourself, and then you won't have to be concerned with what someone else's perspective of your alignment equals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, is that clear?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But if you say it that way, then you sound like these airy-fairy, spooky spiritual folks that kumbaya themselves right to heaven. Because we're talking about grits and gravy, meat and potatoes, real-life practical applications of human meat sacks with non-physical, with their brain, with the fulcrum that balances and accepts and rejects every aspect that is in their creation or in the realm or vibrational proximity of their creation. Because you can create sickness just as well as you can create dis-ease.
Mm-hmm.
As you can create wholeness. So you could use the very standard of the basal minimum standard of care and be more than sufficient to cure your ills.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? And you don't even have to be a doctor of pharmacology to compound that little coal tar expression.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a very simple thing, you see. Nothing then would have a derogatory effect.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only reason that anything has a derogatory effect, is it effect or affect? Or it affects the effect, or the effect is the affect?
Mm-hmm.
We're playing, but we're trying to bring home the point of this process that the human creator is absolutely in control. So therefore, if you wanted to go to the school of alchemy, here's what you would be good at. You would be able to know that you create everything in your experience. You would have the power, and sometimes through tactility, but you'd still have the power to have a causal effect of effect preceding cause,
mm-hmm,
of every aspect of your life. Therefore, the goals would flow to you.
Mm-hmm.
The stream would go your way. The process would be within your grasp or your reach.
Mm-hmm.
You would never be found too far away that you can't get back from there.
Mm-hmm.
You would, mm-hmm, never find yourself in a position to where you would even actually have necessity of a second opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you go for a second opinion if you didn't believe the first one?
Yeah.
want the one to help me with my alignment, then I'm spending my energy trying to line up with your prescribed doom,
mm-hmm.
or make a task of things that there's no way possible I could ever complete. Because if I could have completed it, I would have found myself in your care to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? So therefore, you should start, instead of the neonatal position, you should start off with an oncologist to start with. And we're being a little forward, because we're not pushing against anything. People work hard to get cancer.
Okay.
It's not easy to get and keep. People work hard to get these problems and disconnections and these contrasting experiences that they get to overcome. Why else would they do it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very amazing that people work really, really hard to drive safely, and yet the driving is what kills most of you if you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing that the bus that carries the most people also runs over the most people. It just seems kind of unusual that you can create by default such messes and then wonder how Laurel and Hardy, you remember the comedian,
mm-hmm.
well, this is a fine mess you've got us into, Ollie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is another fine mess you've got us into. Well, poor Ollie didn't know which end was up, let alone that he was causing all the mess.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly was easier for Laurel to blame Hardy for all these problems that come along here.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was so much easier, because it was easier to place that blame. It must be malpractice. So now, if a doctor can commit themselves to malpractice, and there's no malthesis involved, what would you call an alchemist who's lost their way? Malalchemy?
What's malfeasance again?
No, the malthesis of the malpractice, the dynamics that bring you into the place that recognize that there is indeed malpractice.
Well, I just need to understand that if a doctor can commit themselves to malpractice and there's no malfeasance, what's the definition of malfeasance in that sentence?
In that sentence would be the collaborated knowledge that would give that malpractice validity.
You mean that the doctor knew he was committing malpractice?
No, there's lots of malpractice that comes that takes place. It's not labeled malpractice because they have other malfeasance that they can blame the attributing product of their work that wouldn't be known as malpractice.
So other excuses.
Yeah, that was a sweet way of saying it, but we didn't want to be too.
If a doctor commits malpractice, and there's no other reason for the malpractice.
Correct.
And then you're saying, with alchemy, what would you call an alchemist who did what?
How would you find? How would you label if a doctor can commit malpractice? What can an alchemist do to be guilty of malalchemy? I guess that'd be misalchemy, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's much better.
Or unalchemy? Oh, wait, you'll play with one. But we're tangling this up on purpose so you can think about it a different way, and that's the goal here.
Right.
Because once you can think about it a different way, and you think about it for a little while, and then it becomes a thought you've been thinking, which is a thunk thought for a little while, and then you do that for a little bit of time, then guess what? You've had a causal effect of changing your belief system. Okay? So if you understood what alchemy was, you would then realize that you wouldn't have misalchemy if you understood what alchemy actually was.
Mm-hmm.
And we've sort of developed that a little bit, but let's go on further and more thorough. We've broken down the changing from lead into gold.
Mm-hmm.
But now by your Wikipedia definition, if you could find that lead had the same valuation as gold, boy, that would be much easier to convert, wouldn't it?
Valuation, do you mean molecularly or financially?
No, financially.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If you could make gold, well, and this is where we would stop the presses and say, Carolyn, you do understand that if the world were made out of gold, that men would die for a handful of dirt?
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's apropos there, but they never start with that conversation when they're trying to figure out how to turn the lead into gold.
Uh-huh.
But it is so close molecularly that it's just, a half step of an atom to tell the difference. Or as we jokingly say, blind people can't tell the difference between lead or gold.
Mm-hmm.
They weigh the same. I mean, they're just so close in every aspect. The feel is the same. The malleability is the same. If they're just, you can't tell one from another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But they don't kill people with lead, with gold pipes. They kill them with lead pipes.
Yes. Yeah.
You see? Okay. Now, in this alchemy, in this alchemical body, oh Lord, there's another one. Bob's going to love that. This alchemical body, that's one who has a chemical body that can have the science of alchemy applied through their creation process. Now, that's with the full, thorough understanding that you got a meat sack, a non-physical, and a brain. Father, Son, Holy Ghost, all wrapped into one. The Holy Trinity. Okay? Now, that's after that's understood. Then you could practice alchemy all day, every day, and with that basic connection of understanding, which we have thoroughly laid out here, you can then, in effect, make all the lead that you want committed and turned into gold. You can have all of the history, recorded or otherwise, work to your best advantage that affects your belief system, that allows everything that you want to freely and easily flow to you. That puts three into the place where you can then understand in the even the astrology world of how to make the stars line up for you.
Mm-hmm.
My stars, wouldn't that be delightful? You know, it's kind of a dim night. I've lost my way. I'd like the North Star over here a little to the east, because that would certainly be more palatable to me to shine my way into where I want to go.
Okay, let's go back to the alchemical body has a chemical body that can have the science of alchemy working through their creation process?
Yes.
So are you adding to Bob's five
yes.
bodies?
Again, yes.
So is the alchemical body one of the chemical bodies? Or?
Well, you have a chemical body. He'll give
it's
you
one that. Of the bodies, yeah.
Okay. But what if you added, or what if you thought about alchemy as also a body, and the alchemy body would then, if it was tuned in, tapped in, turned on to that frequency that did what an alchemist can do,
mm-hmm.
which is change lead into our metal into gold.
Yeah.
Well, gold's a metal too. So now you're changing a metal into a metal. Gold's a metal too. AU is a metal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now you're turning a metal into a metal. Well, that's not too hard. You can turn a metal into metal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not such a big, bad, hairy thing. And you have the six whales.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you then become a holistic medicine meat sack that is in perfect balance.
Mm-hmm.
Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, compounding. What would you have to stir together in your mortise and pestle to make it come out every time the perfect mustard plaster that cured all your ills?
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently it is indeed available because they named the people who gave that their life's work as a doctrine.
Which means?
That's what they called alchemists, is one who had the magic pill.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
By your definition, I mean, we don't want to give our definition because, law, you don't want the creators to start banishing non-physical, so we'll use your creation. It's as good as any. But we'll play with it and make you think about it a little different way, to a dynamic that allows you to come into your alchemical body.
All right.
You can come into your alchemical body, the mystery landscape, which is already a body. Guess what happens? It gets demystified.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But see, if you know it, it's no longer a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
So let's play with the alchemical side. The alchemical side,
mm-hmm,
of all that you create.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that just a fancy word for being an enlightened human being?
Mm-hmm.
But when you say it like that, everybody can do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of the point. Everybody can.
Yeah.
And these words, this little word play that we're tangling along here, just gives you a new perspective to look at what you think you already know, maybe enlighten your place of knowing to include some of what you call the metaphysical, spooky spiritual, so far out there I can't even find it in my crystal ball, and simplify it back down into that you can indeed have the magic pill that displaces your lack of ease.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to say that a better way. That allows ease to be the predominant factor in your beingness.
Mm-hmm.
That was a mouthful. But if you got there, then it's only the sick that need a physician.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The well don't need a physician, have need of a physician. Oh, so they must have made an A on their alchemy quiz.
Who?
The creator who now is whole.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not holy, just whole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, we've developed the first part of the changing the metal to a metal. Well, if you say it that way, that's not so hard. And then you're the creator in every balance. Delight in blissful experience in your world you create, and you adjust that as you go based upon your wantings or your desires and where you are in proximity to your desire and your essence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you're a long, long way, it's a long, hard road. If you're right there, it's a snap of the fingers and it shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see? Isn't it interesting? Have you ever been through a drive-through window to order food?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're in a car, and you're hungry, and you're busy, and you just run through and grab a bite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You pull up to the little window, and they have this menu board, and you look at the menu, and you make your choice based on what's offered.
Right.
And you speak to the little clown's nose on the speaker board,
mm-hmm,
and you tell them what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you the total, the clown does, on the little speaker. And they say, pull to the first or the second window. But you pull up and you give them your currency of what you're exchanging in exchange for these caloric intake. And magically, just in the matter of a few seconds or maybe a minute, they pour your drink, get your fries, get your burger, get whatever it is, your fish, whatever it was you ordered, your salad. salad, whatever it was, and they put it in a sack and they hand it to you and they tell you have a nice day and thank you for coming by the Jack in the Box.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's a pretty sincere instant manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, sometimes you can go through the drive-thru, not connected with what it is that you're wanting. You can order it, and then that pan of whatever it was you ordered, it just came out of the oven, gets dropped in the floor, and now they don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
Now your fast food just had to become from scratch. You come to the second window, and they say, we're so sorry we're kind of delayed, but we can't hold up the line because of you. You please pull over to the left here, or to the right, and we will get your food out as soon as we can. And you wait 35 minutes on your food. Well, that's no longer fast food inconvenient.
Mm-hmm.
You could have almost grown it, picked it, cooked it, and eaten it yourself in that span of time, almost. But yet, that has everything to do with where you are in the vibrational proximity of that experience, which hopefully is a blissful experience. Hopefully you're eating because it's a delightful thing that you want to bring into your place.
Mm-hmm.
Not from just, I'm not happy and my husband doesn't love me and so I'm going to go eat 9 double cheeseburgers, you see. That's a disconnection point. But it can be a blissful, wonderful thing. Hey, you can get milkshakes and ice cream and all kinds of great stuff in a drive-thru window. There's nothing wrong with it. But where you are in the vibrational proximity of the clown's nose to the window is how fast the fast food is. Would mm-hmm. that not be then a very significant part of alchemy, of mm-hmm. lining up that situation ethics that allow it to be a smooth, seamless transition from pulling up to the clown's nose to getting your food to consuming it?
Mm-hmm. And if we could just say situation instead of situation ethics, what does ethics have to do with that?
Well, because the ethics of how you see that experience, the ethics of, by God, I'm supposed to have my food in 34 seconds, or it violates my ethical agreement with the clown's face that I placed my order with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The ethics of, you served me cold fries and that's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who says what the appropriate temperature of French fries or crisps are?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's in the eye of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it would be the situation, but some people just eat the cold fries. Cold flies.
Mm-hmm.
They just eat the cold flies because that's the best they could hope for.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it can't just be the situation. Otherwise, then you are allowing the clown's nose, direct your creation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's not the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's the issue is between you and the clown's nose.
Mm-hmm.
Not the clown's nose and the window.
Okay.
And so that's an ethical calamity if it doesn't go well for you.
So that's a creating by default.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And yet, many times with you, when you go to this aligned experience of bringing something into your experience,
mm-hmm.
it becomes delightful. It becomes wonderful. It's the most delicious, wonderful thing in the world. We think of your number one, and we won't use the name, but your number one enjoying the hamburger where the grease is dripping off his elbows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, that's bliss. And you line up with that before it comes into your experience. Well, so does the alchemist.
Right. So what we're almost saying here is that an alchemist is the creator.
Yes.
So we've come full circle to what we know.
Yes, that you've already pretty well established and have a basal understanding of it. And then once you understand that the alchemist could take gold and turn it into lead.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, that's not what the definition said, was it? It doesn't exclude that, does it?
Mm-hmm. No.
It's turning metal into metal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if you figured out the process? Well, you can just as easily turn the gold into lead as you can turn the lead into gold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could create a positive experience or a negative experience, but you wouldn't call them that, would you? You would just say they're experiences.
Yes, but guess what, Carolyn? If you come into the place and you figure out how to turn gold into lead, guess
mm-hmm.
what? You got it.
Yes.
And that would be certainly a contrasting experience that you give all your currency for gold to make into something more valuable. You end up turning it into lead. That would be a contrasting experience. But you wouldn't care because you'd be so delighted that you did that transferable transference. That you realize very quickly that that same lead that was gold, you now know how to turn that lead back into gold. So it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
See, that's when you start sorting out the evil ones among you. There is no evil.
Now, I'm just wondering, it seems like we have come full circle. Is there more to be said about alchemy? The new alchemy?
The new alchemy. Well, yes. Well, it's not really new. It's old alchemy.
Yes.
It's just alchemy.
Right.
But the only part that's new, the only thing that's new, is that you now have a much more fully developed understanding of what that art is. An art form is that you much more easily can and certainly would, if you chose to, be able to embrace it from an enlightened standpoint. And that enlightened standpoint would put you at the top of the food chain as far as alchemy goes. Number one, you'd have all the gold you wanted. You'd be well, full, in your body, whole. Okay? And spiritual ramifications would not be foreign. They would be understood and visible within your physical experience. Doesn't that cover every dynamic of that that is?
Yes, I guess what we haven't talked about is living forever. But, I mean, that's within.
Well, living forever, that's easy from the standpoint of you decide which bus is going to run over you. So if you get it from that point, then you kind of go, oh, that's interesting. Okay, which bus is it? Okay, well, it's a bus a long way from here. So there you go. That's your set point.
Okay.
But now we'll go more. We're easy. Okay. Do you want to live forever?
Well, you do anyway. You can't help it.
Doesn't matter. You're the creator.
Mm-hmm.
You can separate yourself from that place.
Mm-hmm.
Any are dead waiting on a disease to claim the body.
Yeah.
So that, by definition, now becomes a point of sometimes contrast. You see, and then but then you get them all riled up when you start saying that every death is a suicide, but it is. I mean, it is. If there is a death, transition is a word we like better because it's more correct, because you're promised eternal life. So, but if you're promised eternal life or the world to come, isn't that interesting? The ones that speak most about the world to come don't even believe in the world that they live in.
Right.
Interesting. And yet, they have no problem embracing the new world, the better world, heaven. But if you can't make it in this world, how can heaven be an improvement? But if you find a way, take up alchemy to the point that you can find bliss in this physical experience, how delicious and how delightful heaven must be. You see, if you can embrace love, and that's all, starting with yourself, number one, and stop being so heavy and ill. Look up evil, if you don't mind, please. Just straighten this out. Get it over with.
Okay, Webster's evil. It is morally reprehensible.
What does that mean?
Well, that's what it. We could look up reprehensible and moral.
Well, no, morally is what we were.
Yeah, morally.
Yeah.
Reprehensible.
But go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Sinful, wicked. Be arising from actual or imputed bad character or conduct.
Imputed or imbued?
Imputed.
So, of questionable repute.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right, yeah.
Because if all have sinned and fallen short of the grace and glory of God,
yeah.
If you're all sinners, then doesn't that make you all evil?
Apparently, yeah.
Well, and now you got to get to the oral moral.
Mm-hmm.
That's an issue because now you're talking about is that how you deal with the immoral minority? You have the moral majority.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you deal with the immoral minority?
Mm-hmm.
Morality is all based. If you live in a island in which clothing is not required, it's not immoral to walk around naked.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll put you in jail in other countries because that's just morally reprehensible.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, who provides the grand design of what's right and of what's moral and what's not?
Mm-hmm.
The individual creator does. How is it that some people can have two moms and that's okay? Or two dads and that's okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's perfectly all right. But for others, somebody's going to hell in a handbasket.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that some people don't have a problem that actually their religion promotes bigamy,
mm-hmm.
and that's
mm-hmm.
their religious right, and that's not immoral, but yet sleeping with multiple women at the same time, it seems to be a problem.
Right. Mm-hmm.
J.W. always has great fun with that when you start quizzing him with that whole process. His standard value statement is if his wife doesn't care, why should you? And she cares, by the way. But if there's some aspect that doesn't bother her, why in the world should it bother you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So it becomes, now you're talking about situation ethics, or situational ethical contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're relative.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Yeah.
Some people, if you imbibe in wine, you're going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. If you smoke a pipe or have tobacco or comb your hair or have two living wives or use cosmetics or have sexual relations before you're old. Oh wait, that's a whole other thing. But you see, it's an empirical misnomer because everybody's value judgments are from a different standpoint of beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you attribute that to the evil ones among you? After a second, no one is evil or everyone is evil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this relates to alchemy how?
Because of the statement that comes into the place of your worth, your value as an alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
You go, I'm not worthy because
okay.
I'm evil. I'm not worthy because I'm not worthy.
Mm-hmm.
Because my morality is not to par. My standard, my ethical demeanor, or I have a reputable my repute is in question.
Right.
Well, who's the questioner? If it's you, then that's between you and you. Not between you and the clown's nose in the window.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it gets very relative there for a second. Then the parts that you can align with as a good alchemist, then most surely would flow And to answer, you'd have eternal life. You could have turn all the gold you wanted into lead or metal into metal. And you'd have the prescription that would cure all ills.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good.
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll run it by Bob, but I think we're good. Let me check the time. Maybe we can go with that, unless you have any more.
Viva Alchemy.
Okay, yeah, 1 minute, 1 hour, 6 minutes.
That's okay.
Yeah,
that's great.
Okay, then we Viva Alchemy. Okay, we're good and we're done. I'm gonna shut.